I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:35 p.m. on Thursday, February 19th, 2026. Present today are Representative Allard, Representative Moore. I have Representative Stapp online. Three co-chairs here, co-chair Foster, co-chair Shiragi, and myself, co-chair Josephson. Also present today are Representative Bynum and the House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lastufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, Secretary Leah Frazier. We've been joined by Representatives Galvin and Jimmy. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office with us. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, the Office of Management and Budget will provide an overview on the Governor's FY27 budget amendments submitted the 30th day of the legislative session. Then they will give an overview on zero-based budgeting. With us today from OMB is Director Lacey Sanders. Director Sanders, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I am the Director of the Office of Management and Budget for the Governor. And as Chair Josephson shared, today's presentation is an overview of the fiscal year 2027 Governor's amended budget. The budget is due by the 30th day of legislative session. This package does have both fiscal year 2027 governor's amendments as well as a few fiscal year 2026 supplemental items. Just for a bit of frame of reference, the supplemental package was due on the 15th day and the amendments are due statutorily on the 30th day. However, as items we're made aware of them, we do try to bring those continually to the committee for consideration. So I do anticipate there will be more items for the committee's consideration in the future. So just caveat that. So just to get started, this is an updated version of the short fiscal summary for unrestricted general funds that we provide each round of this. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time going down in detail, but what I will say is we'll focus on the overall surplus deficit line on the slide about three quarters of the way down the page. With the inclusion of the supplementals that we are presenting today, the overall deficit proposed in the governor's budget is $467 million, and the fiscal year 2027 proposed deficit at this point to be drawn from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund is $1.6 billion. I will just note these numbers are slightly different than the appropriation bill that the committee was working on in HB 289 because I am just focused on the items that have been presented by the governor.
Okay. Please continue.
Thank you. So on slide number three, we have we'll start off with the operating budget governor amended requests. As you can see, we've got the department's the governor's budget that was presented on December 11th, and by agency, we've summarized the total amendments that are presented in the February 18th package. I will walk through in more detail some of the items on the next page, but what I will share is many of these are not new. These are identical or similar in nature to the supplementals that were presented to the committee 2 weeks ago. For example, at a high level in the Department of Health, we have two significant items here related to the federal funding, one being the Rural Health Transformation Funds that we've discussed. This is the second tranche of funding that would be awarded for fiscal years 27 through 29, as well as the Department of Health provided an updated Medicaid projection to the legislature mid-February, and so we've reflected the cost with that updated projection in the 27 budget. So, again, I'll walk through on the following slide some more details, but at a high level, the governor's amendments total $93.6 million of unrestricted general funds. $749.2 million of that is in total, with $643 million of that being associated with federal receipts. So if there are no questions, just at the high-level snapshot, I'll move into highlighting many of the items that are in the amendments. Again, a lot of these you're going to see are noted as a corresponding supplemental. So starting off in the Department of Corrections, we asked for $20 million for correctional facilities and inmate transportation in the fiscal year 2026 supplemental. We're bringing that forward. Again, that need will be continued into the base budget for fiscal year 2027. Additionally, while it's not noted on this slide, there is $3.1 million that ties to a supplemental for inmate health care cost in the Department of Corrections. And again, that has a corresponding supplemental, so we're bringing it forward so that we don't have that shortfall next year in fiscal year 2027. Moving down to the Department of Health, I have already noted the $272 million for the Rural Health Transformation Fund. Again, this is that second tranche. So the first tranche would have been $272 million for fiscal years 26 through 28. This will provide that second tranche of authority for fiscal year 27 through 29.
Okay. Director, Representative Thomas Shefke joined us. Yes. I just wanted to recognize that. We have a question from Representative Bynum for the director.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice, and through the chair. You had mentioned this Department of Corrections, $20 million. We saw this very large supplemental request for the FY26 budget, which is our current year. And then you're indicating now that we have this as an additional ongoing request that's going to be as a supplemental to the 27 budget. If I'm misunderstanding that, please correct me. You guys indicated this is now going to be an ongoing new item. What has changed? What changed in the 26, this current year, that required this to then be added and now that it's going to carry forward and be a continuous item? It just seems a bit odd to me that this is something that feels sudden. And now we're adding it as a supplemental for 27 budget. So can you please explain?
And, Director, if it helps, if this request was there in FY26 in May of last year and we didn't fund it, that may be part of your answer. But please go ahead.
Thank you for that, Chair Josephson. And through the Chair, Representative Bynum, the legislature passed a budget for the Department of Corrections that was short. There were two significant reductions made in the Department of Corrections. One was a reduction of $6.8 million associated with a letter of agreement that the Department of Corrections had never received funding for. So there was a $6.8 million reduction, as well as a $7.5 million reduction in Department of Corrections for the closure of one unit in the Spring Creek Correctional Center. So when the budget was passed by the legislature, we had an over $13 million hole to start with. Additionally, as we've been working through each year of the Department of Corrections, their budget has been short and unable to cover the costs associated with operating, primarily focusing on areas of overtime. The cost to pay individuals to fill overtime exceeds what they have in their budget. So the supplemental was intended to bring the amount of money that they have for the current year to what they need to operate through the end of the fiscal year. And because we carry one budget from 26 into 27, we also recognize that we have a shortfall in the following year that we're trying to prevent having to come back next year for a fiscal year 27 supplemental.
We've been joined by Representative Hannon. Representative Bynum, follow-up?
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice. And I'll hold for now. I don't know. I'll get more information offline or as we move through this process. I don't know that I'm satisfied with that response. It feels to me that there's more information to be had here, and I'm just not ready to engage in that conversation. So I appreciate the opportunity to ask the question.
Well, I understand if Representative Copper here, he would say he has the solution in pension reform. Representative Allard.
Thank you. The overtime comment worried me. And then anything that Representative Bynum is going to chat about offline, I would just kindly request that all of us know about that, if you could, Representative Bynum, because I think your line of questioning is important, and I want to hear more, too, when you're ready. That's all.
All right. I don't know that I can order that or want to.
Representative Bynum, please. There, I did.
Okay. Representative Bynum, then Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Joseph. And yes, any information or conversation that I have with the department, I will ask that that any response be provided to the committee. And then just as a quick comment back, and I don't think we probably want to get in the back and forth. I love debate, but I think that the bill you're referencing from our majority leader, I'm not sure that it would fully address the issue, because I know that shift differentials over time and many other things that are associated with cost of corrections wouldn't be solved with being fully staffed. They still have those costs, and those costs will be continuous and ongoing. But I guess that's a debate for another time. Appreciate you bringing it up.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the Chair. I want to thank you for this presentation, for this page especially. I want to just call out, if I could, for the committee, that we are filling an important hole with that $20 million that we've heard from Ms. Sanders is important. I also want to call out that we've had an amend year after year, at least the years that I've been here, all from DOC, and pretty high numbers, in tens of millions. And I think it's important that we understand that this is our responsibility in terms of public safety. Equally as important is our public education system, where when they have holes, it's not the same. And I just want us to understand that what we're dealing with today is that when there's a hole there, the districts have to figure it out. They end up piling on more students, closing schools. With regard to the overtime, boy, has that been a subject that, you know, as you mentioned, there is an issue around how we can best recruit and retain our officers. Prison guards are so important, and so are teachers, and we're just dealing with this year after year. Now that it's my fourth year in hearing these same things, I just, especially since it's, again, another amend for DOC, and we're not doing anything for education to anywhere near, 20-30%. One year it was 30% that I was here on DOC, and I was shocked. And it's because costs go up, and it's because you have to pay for overtime when you cannot recruit or retain important workers within that department. So I just wanted to comment so that we can reflect on that. We have responsibilities, as you know, for our public education system as well as the Department of Corrections. It's all important, and I think it's just something for us to ponder on. Thank you.
I think your comment is well taken. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the school districts are not the state. They're state responsibilities, but they're not the state, so we think of them as other, and that's unfortunate. Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Jefferson, through the chair. So you're asking for $3.1 million for medical needs. Do you know what the department spends on inmate medical needs per year? If you don't have that, I would just...
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, we would have to get back to the committee with an exact number. It is quite extensive. I will say this is more driven at ensuring that we have 24-hour medical care for the institutions. That's what's driving this $3.1 million, but this is a small fraction of what the Department of Corrections spends on medical.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Allard.
Just one last question. So when we have our federal and rural health with our rural health transformation, are we able to see that itemization, or is it just one like lump sum, here you go, spend it how you want to?
Through the chair, Representative Correct. Allard, right now the Department of Health is working to gather all of the requests across okay. the state. And so they will have reporting back to the committee on how that funding will be allocated. Right now, for the purposes of the budget, it's $272 million, and then we will bring back how it's going to be allocated across the state and for what projects. So that detail will be available. It's just not currently
today.
Available.
Can I just do one quick follow-up?
Of course, follow-up.
Do you have a time frame? Because we're moving quick.
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Allard, I don't have a time frame now. We can follow up with the team that's working on this in the Department of Health and see where they're at with their plans.
Thank you, Chair.
If it's helpful, and I might get this wrong, but I don't think the Department of Health knows yet how that's being spent. If we're having this meeting 60 days from now, they might have some sense of it. And then that begs the question, are we watching that or are we participating? I'm personally, this is Andy Josephson, more in the watching crowd. We can have some oversight, but I think other legislatures are not participating much. We shouldn't think of this money as somehow ours. That's my belief. I could be wrong. There's a difference of opinion. Please continue.
Okay. I'll move on to the second bullet under the Department of Health. I think that's where I had left off. So there is an $8 million request for unrestricted general funds. This is a new item related to Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or the SNAP program, and the administrative cost shift that we experienced at the direction of the federal government. So instead of it being a 75-25 split, we're moving to a 50-50 state requirement to cover the administrative costs associated with that program. Continuing on in the world of the Division of Public Assistance, this is an item that we talked about under the supplemental, which is the state's eligibility systems. As you may recall, the Division of Public Assistance received several multi-year appropriations. Those appropriations are no longer in place, and we're supporting the costs of the division. This will bring those costs online to ensure they have the operating funds to continue those eligibility systems. Continuing under the Division of Public Assistance, we have what's known as the Virtual Contact Center, or a call center associated with completing the eligibility and questions and comments that the Division of Public Assistance receives. This is a total of $8 million. A portion of it is state match, meeting federal funds. This is something that we also have a corresponding supplemental for this year. And then lastly, as I noted, we have the true-up of the federal Medicaid payments and what we anticipate to get through those projections. Under the Department of Public Safety, we do have a new item. This is $1.67 million of state general funds for the Village Public Safety Officer Program, or the VPSO program. This is does have a corresponding supplemental that we'll talk about on a later slide, but essentially the department has experienced a significant improvement in retention of VPSOs. And as those VPSOs are retained longer, salaries increase and costs associated with the work that they do for either equipment or for travel continues to increase. This $1.7 million would allow the department to fill the remaining seven vacancies that they have. Their goal is to, have 100% filled positions and no vacancies. And so in an effort to continue that progress that they're seeing in getting VPSOs in communities, we have a request for next year as well as a supplemental request.
Okay. Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I'm seeing $8 million-ish for SNAP. I thought that additional cost for our share for admin would be in future years. I didn't know that would happen immediately with the new HB, the House bill, Big Beautiful Bill. I thought that was...
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, so this is for next year, for fiscal year 2027.
I thought it was 2030 that was coming into play, so no, it's not. Sooner. It's starting next year.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. And then the
actually, if I might, mm-hmm. to her question, Director, it says corresponding supplemental, correct? So this is a double dip item, is it not?
Chair Josephson, the second bullet, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, doesn't have a corresponding supplemental on this one.
Okay.
Right.
It's a Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. That may be what's causing the confusion. That's the title of the program.
May I have a follow-up, please?
I'm sorry. I was looking at the virtual. Okay.
And, yes, and this please. Is moving down to the virtual. So for that one, this is a brand new virtual call center. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, no. This is a continuation of a system that we put into place, I believe, 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
So just for the committee's knowledge, yesterday's bill, 289, which we had on the floor, it was a $490 million bill. These items weren't added because we hadn't heard from the director. We could have added them, theoretically, by amendment. These total, the supplemental items would bring us to about $550 million, Director?
Chair Josephson, let me just clarify. The items that I'm talking about on the slide now are for fiscal year 27's budget that
Correct.
Will be taken up by the subcommittees.
Right.
The supplementals that are identified on here have already been included in that earlier legislation. There is a future slide that is at the end that has a few items that are different than what would be in HB 289, and I can talk about those
okay.
in a moment.
Okay.
Right. I apologize, Chair Josephson. I was trying to make a concerted effort for people to see what is new and what has a corresponding supplemental. So I apologize okay. for confusion on that.
Right.
Okay. So moving on to the capital budget, we have a few governor's amendments. As you can see, we've, again, got that December 11th date at the top for the governor's introduced budget. And then February 18th, the total amount for unrestricted general fund requests is $10.4 million of state general funds. Of that, I will note we're going to talk about one project that's $8 million. And this is allocating a portion of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's dividend to a specific project in the Department of Revenue. The overall amendment package for capital is $22.5 million. And again, on the following slide, I will talk through each one of those items.
Is that or that being the $8 million for the HFC dividend for a specific project, was that previously allocated? Had the governor's budget spent that dividend?
Chair Josephson, no. A portion of the dividend had been allocated to standard projects that are within AHFC. This would be in addition to, but the full dividend was not expended in the governor's budget.
Okay.
Okay. So on slide six, we'll just talk through these real quickly. We've got under the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, this is an increase of $7.6 million for a capital project that was submitted in December for armory deferred maintenance, replacement, and renewal. This is funding that comes from the Department of Defense and will address armories across the state. Within the Department of Natural Resources, we have a $4.5 million permitting modernization and reform project. This is an information technology or IT project in the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, and it uses those receipts to modernize the system. This is part of, you know, the work that we've been undertaking in the administrative order to improve our permitting and licensing programs across the state of Alaska. Mm-hmm. Within the Department of Public Safety, we have two capital projects. One is for $375,000 for the Alaska State Troopers Ballistic Protection, as well as $2 million of general funds for aircraft critical engine replacement and safety upgrades. These may sound familiar. They were included in last year's budget, but were line item vetoed due to the specific funding source that was used. It was ADA reserves is what was identified, and the projects were removed. We are bringing these back as they are still a priority for the administration and for the department. For example, the Alaska State Troopers Ballistic Protection is equipment that is purchased to support our Alaska State Troopers. That equipment has expiration dates, so we need to make sure we're providing that equipment as a life, health, safety issue. Also really critical is our aircraft safety upgrades and engine replacement. We have a schedule of maintenance that needs to be completed to ensure that that equipment is cared for and that our aircraft that are flying our troopers and other folks around the state is in the best condition possible. And then lastly, under the Department of Revenue, as I noted, we have this $8 million project for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation statewide housing development and access program. This is a similar request to one that was put forward about 2 years ago. AHFC is working with communities to develop land so that we can increase housing access in the state. This may mean putting pioneer roads or other road access across the state, as well as things like utilities and ensuring that, you know, people have access to housing in various communities. The prior project was successful, so this is a continuation of that in ensuring that we have housing availability in the state.
Okay. Representative Bynum, then Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice, and through the chair. So you'd mentioned kind of strategy or rationale on vetoes. You indicated that many of these items were wanted, but they were vetoed because of funding source. Correct me if I'm wrong. So last year when the budget was passed through, there was a CBR vote that said we were going to draw from savings to pay for these things. That vote failed. And within the language of the law, it said that that we would draw from ADA money to pay for this. And then there was basically a secondary provision that said that we'd pull from the higher ed fund to then pay for the remaining amount. The governor, in his vetoes, vetoed that portion of the bill, which was the ADA funding source. And so all of those expenses went to the higher ed fund. So you mentioned that these were being funded because of funding source. I know there was that shortfall, so it put all of the pressure on those two things, those two sources, which was ADA and then the higher ed fund. But the governor vetoed that portion, talking about pulling from ADA. So just a little clarity on the fact of these were still wanted, but because of budget constraints, said they vetoed them. Was it because they didn't want to draw so much from the higher ed fund then?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, just a point of clarification. In addition to the language that you're talking about, which we consider, you know, backfill language, there were specific capital projects that were directly funded with ADA reserves, and those projects is what this fell into, and those were vetoed due to the funding source.
Correct. Thank you.
Yep. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. I want to return to the DGF under the Department of Natural Resources and understand that this is in response to the current, I think it's AO-136. Is that the correct number?
359,
360. The permit regulatory reform that our departments are going through. Is DNR just further along in that process where they've said, and to achieve that, we need some receipt authority to pay for this modernization and reform, and we might anticipate that other regulatory agencies may on down the road we see a similar request.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, yes, I would say that that's an accurate statement. Deputy Commissioner Crowther is here if you'd like more information.
No, I just, okay. Thank you.
Through the chair, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I just sort of planting that seed because I'm dealing with a couple other agencies whose reg package is just up for review. But, right, so DNR is at the front of the curve of saying, here are these regulatory reforms, and we're probably going to, but it's receipt authority for the permittees to pay for that modernization as we do reg consolidation and cleanup.
Okay, should we move on to slide 7 then?
Yes. All right. So slide seven, as I noted earlier in the conversation, as we identify supplementals or other needs, we'll make sure that we bring those before the committee. In this package, we also had a few items that were supplemental requests. I will talk through those just at a very high level. I think the largest one that we want to touch on today is going to be the fund capitalization associated with the fire fund deposit. I'm going to move forward to slide eight just to walk through the supplementals at a department level. So in the Department of Health, we did have a slight reduction in the updated Medicaid projection for fiscal year 2026. So we're bringing forward an amendment to reduce the ask associated with Medicaid. As I noted earlier, with the Department of Public Safety, that increase associated with the VPSO program, there is a supplemental request for the current year so that the department can fill those positions expeditiously and ensure that the costs associated with filling those positions are met. So that is a slightly reduced request of $1.25 million. In debt service, the Department of Revenue has done an excellent job of looking at all of our bonds and has a reduction in the state unrestricted general fund costs of about $1.3 million associated with bond refunding. Kudos to their team in finding ways to save the state money in future debt payments. We'll see a continued decrease in the future years as well. And then lastly, as I noted, one of our larger items today is $43.7 million. This is a deposit into the fire suppression fund. What I will note, and just to provide clarity on, is there were two letters during the interim that declared disasters for fires totaling $55 million. That has been represented on the fiscal summary that we've been talking about since the original introduction of the governor's budget. This is $43.7 million in addition to that $55 million. So a total need in the fire fund of $98 million. And part of this is due to, as the Department of Natural Resources works through the various cooperative agreements that they have, older fires, they work through a process of allocating the cost and who that cost goes to, and whether it's a State of Alaska cost or another organization's cost. And then we have bills that are due that we have to make sure that we're meeting those obligations. The department worked really hard to catch us up on older years. So a portion of this cost is associated with those former years prior to 2024. Additionally, we are getting ready for the spring fire season. There is an amount in here to be prepared for this spring. We also have Deputy Commissioner Goodrum here if there are specific questions related to fire, recognizing that this is a large cost to the state.
Director, when we look at slide seven of the UGF totals for the three dates of supplemental deliveries, or delivered items of $216 million. Our bill had $490 million. And the difference, one thing I don't see here is the Higher Education Investment Fund. Mm-hmm. And I think there was some sort of friendly dispute about whether some fire dollars were to be ratified, or rather it might have been disaster dollars, as opposed to appropriated. But now, if the members look at slide eight, we see another, it's in the range of $43 million. So our bill from yesterday, just so that members are aware, the $490 million bill, and this also doesn't have the transportation match. That's at least one other missing item. That bill is really $540 million. I'm not saying I'm aghast, but I'm not saying the administration is the slightest bit responsible for it. I just want members to understand that's what we're up against in FY26. Is that a fair statement, Director?
Chair Josephson, I would just comment, my only comment, I think, to what you had said is, you know, this does include the $55 million that we talk about for fire and wanting to ratify it. I've been in conversations with Director Painter at Ledge Finance. We'll make sure that we record that $55 million appropriation, which you guys already have included in HB 289. This is only the operating budget. So if you go to our original slide, we talk about $467.6 million. That includes the state transportation funding. That includes the $55 million for the disaster plus the additional $43. I think the number that you're talking to, Chair Josephson, is a little higher because there was an additional $35 million included for disaster in HB 289, as well as $30 million of headroom. And so those two items are not included in the governor's numbers at this point. Those were additions by the legislature.
And I'll get to the members' questions here, but wasn't the $35 million extra for disaster, that wasn't pulled out of thin air? Or did we get some inkling from the executive branch that that was coming?
Chair Josephson, that is not something that we put forward. That was something that was added at the legislature's discretion. It has to do with the contingency on whether the disaster for the Halong is counted at a 25-75 split or a 90-10 split.
Correct.
Which we just don't have notice yet.
But just to emphasize my point, if the appeal of the FEMA denial goes poorly, by my reckoning, we're at around $535 to $540 million. And it's more than that if the disparity test has failed, as I understand it. It would eclipse $600 million. Does that sound possible?
Chair
Josephson,
yes.
Given those
yes.
caveats?
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Representative Hannon, then Bynum.
Mr. Chairman, you've drilled down on the points that I was going to make, but I guess I just want to use the word, these are all supplemental for the current fiscal year, and say the fire suppression fund, it's hard to envision while it's snowing, but that the fire season in the interior starts about April 1st these days, so supplemental need is great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bynum and Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice, and through the chair, just really quick, a couple things that got brought up. We were talking a bit about HB 289. That was a supplemental budget that was on the floor of the House yesterday. Debated that. There's still action to be taken. For all of these items that are included, I think that bill, we're looking at $490 million. How many of those items do we need immediate response on?
Director.
Chair Josephson, through the chair, Representative Bynum, the governor put forward his supplemental budget as a standalone supplemental budget with not the urgency, the sense of urgency that was provided. Normally, we would have what we refer to as a fast track supplemental put forward by the administration. That didn't happen this year. As Department of Transportation Commissioner has noted, the STIP, while incredibly important, we have until July 1. I think it's a policy call by the legislature on whether or not to move things faster or the sense of urgency. And so I will defer to the legislative body to make that decision.
Follow up. Rep. Bynum.
Thank you. So we looked at what we actually had in a bill that was supplemental being moved through. There's some additional costs that were associated with fire suppression that's beyond what's in the bill, specifically HB 289. I believe the number was $43.7 million additional need. When we looked at that bill, the supplemental bill, there was $30 million of effectively headroom put into that bill. We obviously don't know exactly where we're going to end up with oil and final numbers, but that's less than the $43 million. So my question is, without an additional supplemental, what is the department or what are the departments going to do to meet this obligation?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, there are still opportunities with appropriation bills to work with the legislature and the administration to determine where things could be added at a later date. As I noted earlier, there will be more amendments that we bring forward as things are known. For example, we recently received notification of the interest arbitration associated with the Alaska Correctional Officers Association. Those amendments were not ready in time to distribute by the February 18th deadline, so we'll bring those to the committee in the future. So, you know, if something isn't funded in the budget, we have to work on a case-by-case basis with the department that it's impacting to determine what we're going to do or what we're going to stop doing. That can be a variety of things, either, you know, holding things vacant, not making expenses. It's not something I can just give a blanket answer for. It depends on the size and the scope. We know we have to meet our obligations associated with, you know, personnel and people working. You know, we have to pay our employees. We have to pay our contracts. So it's, yeah. Does that help answer your question?
Appreciate that. One quick
yes
follow-up. Thank you. One of the things that, through the chair, one of the things that I'm being asked quite a bit about is it really is talking about this idea that the governor, when the budget was passed last year, went through and he made his line item vetoes. And some of these items that were vetoed were things that we knew likely that we would need. And then fast forward, we have a supplemental request that's coming to put back into the budget specifically those items. Disaster relief is an example. Can you give us a little bit of the thought process on why we would be removing those items through a veto and then turning around to ask for that back? I know that that's absolutely needed, but I'm just trying to understand the rationale on what we were trying to accomplish by putting those vetoes in place to begin with, knowing that we were going to need those funds, and not only that we would need those funds, but potentially we would be something different or more.
Mm-hmm. Director.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, I, you know, without divulging confidential conversations surrounding a particular item, what I will say is that when the governor was looking at the appropriation bill last June after the legislature had left session, we had seen a very steep drop in oil prices, a very quick drop over a very short period of time. We worked with the Department of Revenue to provide an updated projection of what revenue was going to look like at that time. We work very closely with our agencies to determine what might be a good amount to be sustainable in a future year. I think we all can agree Halong was not something we expected. Nor would ever expect. We would never want something like that to happen. Those costs would far have exceeded the amount that we would have put into the disaster relief fund. There's a lot of considerations that have to be made when working through the veto review process.
Thank you.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson and Director. I may have missed this already, but I did not see or hear from you what the plan is with regard to reinvesting into the higher ed fund, which I think we took a little over $120 million last year in order to budget balance the budget. And I think it might have been I don't recall exactly which body decided to do that, I guess knowing that we couldn't get a CBR draw at that moment. But now my recollection was we were all had the same mindset to refill that. But I don't see that here and just wanted to hear what's on the mind of the governor, if you know.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, that was an item that was introduced in the governor's original budget as a supplemental.
Thanks.
To put that money back from the CBR into the Higher Education Investment Fund.
Thank you.
So that would be shown on slide 2 under the row, total supplementals and RPLs.
Yeah,
that would be part of that.
Chair Josephson, yes.
All right.
Thanks.
Let's go to slide 9. Okay. Oops.
It's okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. Chair Josephson, if you'd like, I can transition to the second topic that we were going to cover today, which was the intent language for zero-based budgeting.
Yes. Since we're ahead of schedule, in a sense, and I mean for this meeting, I am confused about something, Director, and there's a debate, of course, about whether the $70 million for the transportation match is an urgent matter or not, and that's sort of been had. But as to the other items, those of us who, and I hate to use the analogy because it's overused, but when I think of a household and you have a mortgage that's due, for example, in March, you can't wait till June to pay it. And so I'm just wondering how these other accounts, whether they're fire suppression, disaster, Medicaid, how, and I know Medicaid, you know, that could sort of be covered because if we run out of money in June, presumably we won't because we'll have passed a budget and cured that problem. But can you explain how it's okay that these $540 million of supplemental items can wait until, I mean, the governor, these would be transmitted, let's say, May 25th. Maybe he has 2 weeks or 3 weeks because we're out of session. We're looking at June 20th. How did these agencies pay their bills?
Chair Josephson, so it's a lot of work on a case-by-case basis with each individual agency that we're talking about. I'm just going to pick one example for the committee, if that's okay. For the Disaster Relief Fund, we have a substantial need in the Disaster Relief Fund. Right now, the governor has authority to temporarily borrow from other capital projects that maybe aren't to the point of writing a check out the door. So currently, we have worked with the Department of Environmental Conservation to borrow $10 million from a Village Safe Water Program capital project that isn't ready to have, you know, construction going out the door. Is that ideal? No. But it's a temporary solution for us to ensure that the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs is paying the obligations that they have before them. We can't do that, that's just one example. We can't do that in all cases. So we work very closely with the departments. We have quarterly projection meetings with them to see where they're at on things. Fortunately, we have been in a case where we have had a budget passed timely and that bills can be paid in that end of June time period before the deadline. But it's a case-by-case basis when you're talking about, you know, the $20 million for the Department of Corrections. You know, that's payroll. That's payroll that is, you know, we're making payments to individuals based on a payroll calendar that's going to run. That payroll is going to happen whether or not we have the appropriation today. That's one of the accounting structure rules that we have so that individuals are ensuring that they're going to get paid. If the money is not there, then I have to come back and ask for a ratification from the legislature to put that money back. So there are a lot of rules surrounding finance that I rely on the Division of Finance to ensure that we're meeting our needs. We try to use all of the tools in our toolbox to make sure that individuals are getting their contracts paid and payroll is being met. We may hold on making a payment until we have the resources to do so. But again, it's a case-by-case basis.
Representative Allard.
Thank you. And I just wanted to know, Mr. Co-Chair, if I could just do a little bit of clarification for the public, too. Mm-hmm. Thank you. In regards to a supplemental, we're looking at departments that we've given a budget to that have exceeded that budget and have come back to us saying, I went over budget, I need more money, because they couldn't stay within their own means. So I can gather some departments might need a few extra dollars over time, but we know where our overtime is generally because we have the same every year. So I'm concerned that we're just giving a blank check in my opinion, to a lot of these departments because Representative Justice and they're not staying within their budget, and they just keep coming back to us for a handout. So it makes life very difficult. And I think the public needs to understand that as well as what you had commented on too. As the executive branch, how are you guys looking at speaking and handling this with the departments to make sure they don't just keep coming back, blowing their budget because they think we're just going to keep writing them a blank check? Can you help me with that?
Through the chair, Representative Director. Allard, yeah. I have representatives from almost every single agency in the room right now. And hopefully they're all hearing the message loud and clear that I also articulate, which is we have to live within our budgets. It's difficult. It's not an easy thing. I think we have unique circumstances surrounding some areas. We've talked about corrections. It's a downstream effect, right? They're getting the outcome of the Department of Law, the Department of Public Safety, the court system. They don't have a choice with those inmates. We can't just release those inmates to save costs associated with housing them. But your point is taken, which is we need to live within our budgets, and we'll do everything that we can. We work very closely with each agency on projections to ensure that they're living within their means and to identify as soon as possible when we have areas that are a concern.
Just a comment?
Yes, comment. Representative Allard.
I just want to make sure that all the department heads, commissioners understand. I don't know that I could put it so gently. Stop spending money. If you have a cost, then do your budget better and stop coming to us for an absolute astronomical size amount of a supplemental. It's just, it's not okay. We have a disaster that we have to address. Wholeheartedly needs to be funded accordingly. We have a dividend that needs to be paid out to the people that has been swiped. And I'm going to say it, the department heads are going to be responsible for not being able for us to pay a dividend to the Alaskans because you keep coming back with your hand out because you can't do your own budget. Thank you.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice, and through the chair. Just for a little clarity, I'm just trying to get a better understanding. When we talk about the need for additional funding because of overtime, for example, I can give an example. When I was director of electric utility, we were short-staffed, and so short linemen, I'd have to send linemen out. We'd work overtime, and I'd have to pay those linemen overtime. So my overtime budget would fall short. Projection for the going to the end of the year, I know that I would look at my projections. We'd do monthly projections, and might be short on my available funding for overtime. And I know, well, that's because I'm short-staffed. So what I would do is I would have to put a request in for a transfer for additional funds into my overtime, but I would take it from my personnel line because I was short personnel. So I had the money, I just didn't have it in the right place. And usually that overtime was an additional cost, but when we talked about one for one FTE, the overtime cost is less because it was not fully burdened. So I'm just trying to get a better understanding when we're talking about our departments. I'm being told on one hand we have all of this overtime because we're short-staffed. And then you're coming back and asking for additional funding to cover that overtime. Why are we not doing the transfer from vacant positions to pay for the overtime?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, I'm going to do my best to clearly articulate some of the reasons why this doesn't work. It's complicated. It's not very straightforward. First, in an agency, we don't provide a budget for 100% of their positions to be filled. So if you have 10 positions or 100 positions, you have a vacancy factor to start off the bat. So you're already short. So instead of having enough funding to fill a position 365 days, right, you maybe have two of those positions that you don't even get funding for out of the gate, because we know that in the state we will have attrition and turnover, and so we don't fund at 100%. So right out of the gate, we're already short funding an agency. They aren't fully funded. So there's, I hear this term, there's slush funds sitting around because they're not utilizing that money. That's factor one, number one. Factor number two that plays into this is, yes, while you have a position that is vacant and somebody is covering for that, that person may be, and I'm going to use corrections as an example, you may have a correctional officer 1-2. That's an entry-level correctional officer. That makes a base, I'm making numbers up now, but let's say they make $20 an hour. You have somebody coming in to cover that position that might be a correctional officer 3 or 4 that has a higher rate of pay at $30 an hour or $40 an hour. And it's overtime for them. So it's time and a half. That is an exponentially higher cost than what you budgeted for as a CO1 at $20 an hour. That's what we're facing in corrections. That's making it so difficult to determine how much we need in personal services to cover when there's vacancies. Yes, there is some money there, but it may not be sufficient to cover a correctional officer 4 that's covering for a correctional officer 1-2. That's just one example of what we're facing, but probably the most, you know, direct one that I can point to in corrections.
You follow up?
Yes, follow up.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate it. And I guess that, you know, we obviously, or at least I want to make sure that we're providing the resources necessary that you can hire those positions. But I also have an expectation that this has been an ongoing issue. This isn't new. We understand that the scenario you just described is this normal operating condition that you have. And so right up front, to me, it feels like that next year when we're looking at the 27 budget, we should understand that this is the dynamic or the situation we're operating in. And so that full ask should be there, including the potential overtime request. It should be in the budget already with the explanation that you just gave that says this is what this situation is. So I would hope that that would be a model for the departments as a whole, all of them, that when they're running into these short staffing scenarios, that we fully think about that. Because this didn't just happen. This was a conversation last year. It was from before I was here, it was a conversation. I've been watching it for several years. It's been an ongoing issue. And I personally don't have a problem with making sure we're fulfilling the obligations to the citizens. I think the problem that we have is that we're not clearly articulating to them what the problem is when we're short funded or what funding is actually necessary. And so we're playing these games where we're moving money around and asking for supplementals after the fact, and it makes it a real challenge when we're trying to actually put together a good 27 budget if we're not taking that into account up front. So I appreciate your guys' effort on that and trying to do a better job of clarifying it for us as we move forward.
Co-Chair Shragi.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and thank you, Director Sanders, for being here. I appreciate the discussion. I think it's actually been very helpful. You talked a little bit earlier about in response to Co-Chair Josephson's question about what do you do if this all just gets rolled in to the end, and what budgeting challenges does that create for you all? $450 million, $500 million, that's a significant shortfall in the current fiscal year. And in my short term, in the time in the legislature, I think I've seen the departments have to do this before, but not at this scale. So I'm not going to ask you to speak to the challenges again, because I think you articulated those, but the magnitude stands out to me. And then the question that I have is, does it get more complex the further along we go, or is it just already complex, and whether we take action now or 3 months from now, it's going to be the same level of complexity? Can you speak to that at all? And then related to that, I've heard about the complexity, but I'm not hearing the urgency on wanting to see these funds actually arrive to you all. I'm not hearing the urgency behind the legislature taking action on the supplemental. Can you square all that for me and just talk a little bit about, how does the complexity change over time? is there a juncture at which you start to worry and it starts to create real problems for you in trying to be able to find fund sources to be able to pull from? I understand for fire, maybe there's some capital funds, but it seems like on the operating side, probably more difficult. But can you try to address all of that? I know I threw a lot at you. Thank you.
Director.
Through the chair, Co-Chair Shragi. First off, I want to just remark on one thing before I go towards that direction. Our state agencies and those that are in the room and the leaderships in the department do a wonderful job at balancing their budgets at the end of the year. They face incredibly difficult decisions. You've got people that are serving Alaskans and wanting to make sure that, you know, people are safe and healthy, and they're balancing a lot of needs. I am merely in a position at the Office of Management and Budget that I am watching what is happening in these agencies. And so I don't want to diminish the hard work that they are all tasked with in trying to get to the end of the year. And I will say there have been incredibly concerted efforts to ensure, and believe me, there are more needs brought forward than we could ever fully address, because there just isn't the resources there to meet every need in the state. And it's a very difficult position to be in. As far as timing goes with a supplemental, yes, there is a level of, you know, having a level of certainty is always better. I think that people feel more comfortable and confident when you know you have items that are funded and addressed. There is always, you know, that uncertainty of getting to the end of session and what is going to happen and what is the final outcome going to be. But that's part of the process that we have in play. This body and the rest of the 60 legislators are the ones that have to determine at what point something is moved forward. Is it difficult? I think the biggest difficulty from my perspective is ensuring that our bills are paid. We want to be in a position where we're paying our bills. We don't want to have that uncertainty of are we going to be able to pay our bills or not. But further than that, it's a decision for the legislative body to make on how quickly to do something or to take care of something through the appropriation process.
Follow up. Rep. Shragi.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. So it's our choice, and the choice is ultimately, do we want the administration to have to pull from funds from Village Safe Water? Do we want to have to impound or otherwise curtail statutory obligated services prior to the end of the year? Do we want to force departments to use interagency receipts, to push them to other departments to meet timely bills? To what degree do we want your administration to be put under that level of complex operating environment, and to what extent do we want to essentially authorize you to spend funds without appropriation and seek ratification afterwards, or rob Peter to pay Paul, at least temporarily, to meet immediate obligations? That's the choice that we have, whether or not we want to have our bills be paid timely and following all the rules, or whether or not we want to inject a lot of complexity, instability, and I suspect with that some increased costs that come with that, is you all are spending your time and your resources to try and navigate problems created by not having those funds. That's right? Yeah.
Through the chair, Representative Shragi, or chair, Co-Chair Shragi, I think that is an accurate.
Representative Jimmy, then Moore, then Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. You speak about public safe and healthy. And if I heard you correctly, you were mentioning that they wanted to borrow. How much did you say they wanted to borrow from the Village Safe Water?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy. So Village Safe Water Program gets an annual capital project in the budget each year. And so we are borrowing temporarily $10 million from that capital project from last year into the disaster relief fund so that we can make sure that we're paying our bills.
Follow. So when you say have people safe and healthy, how is borrowing from VSW for many communities that don't have running water, where tuberculosis is still being passed on, COVID, the flu. How is this showing us that you're protecting and providing safety for us out in the rural, or where there is no running water?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, that's a great question. We work very closely with the Department of Environmental Conservation to ensure that the work that they're doing now doesn't require that funding to go out the door. They have assured us that they will continue to work on the projects that they're providing to those communities. And when they need that money to go out the door, they will have it there available through the supplemental coming through.
Last follow-up.
Yes,
or follow more up. Of a comment.
Comment, Representative Jimmy.
And, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. You could sit there and say that, but seeing my communities, my villages firsthand, there are still many villages that are still waiting for running water, and that to me is not providing safety and providing health for communities.
Chair Josephson, one last follow-up for me, if I may.
Yeah, can I come back to you?
Oh, yeah.
Representative Moore.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Through the chair, thanks for being here. I just want to go back to a comment that you had made about back to corrections and with the overtime with level one and twos, and then maybe a three and four would come in and fill in for that overtime position. What is the maybe you can explain why something like that would happen? Why wouldn't a one or two cover a one or two? Why are we having positions come in and fill for, you know, this crazy amount of money? I mean, we have all of our state departments are understaffed. There's only corrections ever asking for overtime pay. Corrections seems to be always in a supplemental. And so maybe we can get it. Are we trying to find ways to spend within their means and corrections? Is there a map and a plan and a direction? Is there a vision for trying to spend within their means? Are we looking at other departments and what they're doing to not have all this overtime issues as well? Or maybe we can just talk about that a little bit for the public and for myself being new here. This just seems like a crazy amount of money from one department asking for overtime money.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Moore, I do want to clarify that this isn't all associated with overtime. Last year, the legislature reduced $13 million out of the Department of Corrections budget. This is restoring $13 million plus some associated with overtime. So just to clarify, there was a reduction that the legislature chose to make last year, and we're asking to restore it. Secondarily to that, to your question, Department of Corrections is unique. They have a very, I am not an expert in it, but they have a very detailed and rules-based system associated with their contractual bargaining unit, which is the Alaska Correctional Officers Association. There are rules in place that when a correctional officer signs up for overtime and who gets selected, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in this. I may have misspoke in the earlier committee this morning. There used to be a rule that said that seniority would get overtime preference. That's no longer in place. But there are still rules in that contract that pertain to who gets to be in the position of overtime. The ACOA contract with the state of Alaska has been in an interest arbitration for 3 years now. We have not been able to negotiate anything beyond salaries for that particular union. So it makes it difficult for the department to be able to react in a way that another agency may when it comes to who's addressing the overtime or who's working that overtime. You also have a very different nature of work. It's a 24-hour institution that has minimum staffing levels that have to be adhered to. You have to have people in those positions. That means we can't just choose not to put somebody in an institution or not to fill that overtime role because we have to have coverage for the institutions. And I know, I believe I've got Deputy Commissioner Wilkerson on the line, as well as Director Worley in the back of the room, if we want to bring up for more explanation if you're looking for more.
Just follow up.
Yes, follow up.
So what was the $13 million? We cut it, the legislature did, and then they asked for it back, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so what is the increase from year to year for like the last, say, 5 years for the Department of Corrections budget?
Through the chair, Representative Moore, I can get you that number. I don't have it off of the top of my head.
Yeah, I think that'd be really good to know what that department is increasing every year.
And in fact, we have a graph that we can provide you that shows a 10-year span.
Thank you so much.
Okay, I see Representative Galvin and then Co-Chair Schrage. Co-Chair Schrage.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I just wanted to get back in the queue because I've decided I don't like any of our options. How do I get out of paying these bills, Director Sanders? I say this with some levity and humor, but I mean, in some seriousness, I talk to my colleagues about how we address the supplemental, and I hear from some of my peers that they're very unhappy with the overruns in the Department of Corrections, and they don't want to pay the bill. Is that an option? Is there any way to reduce the amount that we're going to have to pay for fiscal year 26? I mean, there's some disagreement there's some frustration with the $13 million reduction to DOC not being followed, but I mean, the decisions have already been made by the administration not to make that reduction, either because it's infeasible or otherwise. Let's not get into that now, but the decisions have been made. Is there any way to get out of these bills, or do they have to be paid?
Director.
Through the chair, Co-Chair Schrage, the bills have to be paid. The decisions are at the point of a policy call, especially for the Department of Corrections. And to that extent, I would say that the Medicaid budget is also a policy call. We have statutes in place that are, you know, formula driven for Medicaid. We say we have to follow the law when it comes to things like education and following the BSA statute and the foundation formula. We also have that same thing for Medicaid. That's a $43 million increase that we are obligated to pay. So notwithstanding a policy call and a decision to change how we're operating, this is the cost of doing business for these few items that I'm mentioning.
Follow up.
Co-Chair Schrage.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Those policy calls are all forward-looking, though, right? That's how we would reduce the budget for fiscal year 27 in Department of Corrections or in Department of Health or otherwise. Fiscal year 26 is locked. I mean, the expenses are incurred or will be incurred, and these bills will have to be paid.
Through the chair, Co-Chair Schrage, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you.
And I'm allowing a lot of liberty here because I can tell that we're doing fine, although we will transition to the next file, quote unquote, soon.
So thank you, Hannah. Co-Chair Josephson. I've served on the Department of Corrections Budget Subcommittee all 8 years that I've been in the legislature. And it's a sad and tragic learning curve. But a couple things that I would be happy to share with my colleagues. First, much of the overtime occurs where corrections officers work shifts, and it may be that you're, after your 2 weeks on and you're supposed to go week off, that your replacement is ill and can't come in, so they can't substitute a different level corrections officer. You're held over, and you're at time and a half for another week, or two, or 3 days, or 12 hours, because you're the person there and the replacement isn't there. So a lot of the overtime is not planned for. It's you're the corrections officer on duty and there is no replacement coming in and you can't go home today. Additionally, policy calls that we have made can shift how long someone stays in the prison. Department of Corrections has no control over those policies. And one of the things that if you look at our parole board, we have virtually plummeted in our discretionary parole over the last decade. So, for example, we could do medical geriatric parole. You are dying and are our inmate and have very expensive cancer treatment, but we are keeping you to the day you die in our possession, therefore covering all your medical costs. And you might have been with us 20 years and you're very expensive. As we all know, medical costs at the end of life are very expensive. And we have virtually no discretionary parole for any reason, including medical. So we have escalated our in-custody medical costs dramatically by being, quote, tough on crime. But understanding when we're tough on crime, that's tough on our budget. That means that if we want them to serve every day of a 30-year sentence, you may be very expensive in our care. Most of our inmates have significant mental health issues, significant diagnosed mental health issues before they come into our custody. And they typically don't get healthier when in custody. They may be stabilized, but they're not suddenly taking less costs. So the Representative Shragi is exactly right. Those are policy calls that we could look at to reduce future costs, but the cost that we have paid to our employees to keep us safe outside of the prison system are obligations we have. And when we say cut the budget, it doesn't mean that we're not really able to cut the budget in ways that we think. It's not another agency that just says we're going to not process this permit today, or we're not going to open our doors. We're going to work 4 days a week as a way to reduce our overhead and heating costs. 365 days a year, 24/7, our prisons have to be heated, they have to be maintained, and people in our custody have to be cared for, and that's feeding and health care. And it's not good health care, it's basic health care.
Thank you, Representative. Also the state is a large tanker. It's not as nimble as we think. It moves very slowly when we change policy. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I would say that it's delightful to hear that the committee is so much in support of Department of Corrections and their needs. I look forward to making sure that we're going to be meeting all of the needs of the department to ensure that we get recruitment and retention. So that's good to hear. But I did have a question about one of the comments made about the $13 million, that it was a policy decision of the legislature not to fund that. And whether that was a good policy decision or a bad policy decision, the policy decision was made not to do that. That was actually removed by, I believe, this committee. And now we're asking to put that money back into the supplemental, and it has been put into the supplemental, and that we're asking for that money into the future. And so I'm just trying to get a better understanding of when that policy decision was made to remove that, that we're now adding it back. As an example, the Department of Public Safety had put a request in our budget to put a trooper post in Talkeetna, and the legislature made a policy decision that we were not going to fund that. There's good reasons why that was brought forward to put it there. A policy decision was not to do that, not to fund it. It was fought for, was removed. And the department then this year said, we are not going to be making that request again. They're going to focus their efforts on other things that they think would be good. Not that that isn't still needed. So I'm just curious about the policy decision of the legislature was to remove those funds, and then they were being added back. So that's the first question. The second question is that money obligated, the $13 million in the supplemental that already been obligated and spent?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, the difference in the two examples that you provided from my perspective are the Department of Public Safety was going to stand up a new post. That action was not taken. The reductions that were taken to the Department of Corrections, there's no action that they can't not take. They have those inmates in their custody. So by arbitrarily cutting them by $13 million, there's no change in the result of the action by the department. So while, yes, the department, or excuse me, the legislature chose to appropriate a lesser amount, we can't release the inmates. And we can't, the law is the law as far as withholding or holding those inmates. And so the reaction by the department is they have to continue to operate. Are there things that they can do to change their behavior in the Department of Corrections? Absolutely. And they will take those actions, but to the scale of $13 million, it's too large of a scale to be reactionary to meet that much of a reduction.
Okay, we're going to go to Representative Allard for a penultimate comment, because I get the last comment.
Okay, fair enough. So there's $13 million. That's the ask. I mean, you could close Port McKenzie, which is a farm prison, move those 100 and I think there's only 147 beds, and I think there's only about 90 prisoners. I have to figure that out. We could just consolidate them in a different prison. That would save us about $8 million.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, there are probably a lot of ideas that people have that could come up with some money. I'm happy to have you talk with Commissioner Winkleman about those ideas and why they work or not. I am not in the operations, so I can't speak to why that would work or not.
But that's an option.
First of all, Director, I think that Deputy Commissioner Wilkerson, who is listening, you said, I'm not sure I can defend all of this, but you did a very good job. I want to tell you that. You were aided by Representative Hannon, who explained it well. I was here in 2016 when there was a significant reform proposal. And I'm telling you, a very significant reform proposal. So Title 11 was basically shredded and rewritten across the board. I read that bill twice, 115-page bill. Spent hours poring over it. It changed lots of things. And it suggested a flatlining of the costs in the out years. My memory is that, you know, it was supposed to be backed by investment in reentry and rehabilitation. And just because a fiscal note says, oh, yeah, we're going to do this, someone has to be vigilant the next year and make sure it's in there. And I'm not sure that ever happened. And there was great upset over things like vehicle theft in the first degree, which said, you know, you steal a car, time number one, you have no jail experience from that. And so I think the reform effort overreached. It swung the pendulum way too far in the other direction. I was not a fan of the bill, and so some of this I take some blame for. But I want to give an attaboy to your ASDs, because most of the ads we're talking about are not excess ads. And as the director said, they didn't misfire. You asked for the $13 million. It was not this side of the Capitol that deprived you of the $13 million, for the record. Not beating up on the other chamber, but that is not the historical record. So, you know, one thing, and the ASDs already knew this because they're citizens who read papers and talk to one another, but this is a reflection of how dire our circumstances are. You know, we're one and the same time easily the richest state, the envy of the nation with the permanent fund, but we're really becoming quite poor. And you see it in hearing after hearing. It's very frustrating. I want to thank you. I want to lay some ground for what's the next item that we'll do in 15 to 20 minutes. In members' packets is an excerpt from the intent language memo on the Legislative Finance Division website. In the enacted FY26 operating budget, there was intent language requesting the Office of Management and Budget to zero base budget for one agency. I don't remember the author of that, but there it was in the bill. The highlighted sections in this excerpt are OMB's response to that request. Director Sanders, would you like to begin this discussion?
Thank you for that, Chair Josephson. So, yes, before the committee is a document that speaks to the intent language that was provided by the legislature last year, instructing the desire to see one agency utilize a zero-based budgeting approach. Given the time constraints, and I can walk through those in just a moment, zero-based budgeting was not something that could be completed before the legislature convened again this year. So just for a frame of reference on timing, the legislature adjourns late May. Shortly following that is an extensive process on veto review to get the bills signed and enacted into law before July 1 when the start of the fiscal year occurs. That moves us quickly into July, which is a pretty extensive time for the Office of Management and Budget working with the state agencies to not only close out the prior fiscal year but start the next fiscal year. We go through what we call reappropriation, which is a time frame between June 30th and August 30th. To close out the prior fiscal year, it's very time intensive. And then here we go again, starting September 1st, the administration begins its work on the development of the budget that will be released in December. And we have a short time frame from September 1st until December 15th to put together an entire budget that is statutorily due to the legislature. The principles of zero-based budgeting are well thought. I mean, it's a great concept. OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, did do some research. Nationwide right now, there are no other states that are using zero-based budgeting. We had hoped that by researching what other states are doing, we could use that as a model to start the development process for zero-based budgeting. We did not make success in that area. And after some extensive internal conversations about what zero-based budgeting would look like, decided that we would hold off on implementing any zero-based budgeting for an agency this year's budget, and articulate the desire for us to work with the legislature on what the expectation is by the legislature in a zero-based budgeting world. Part of that means we need to work very closely with the Division of Legislative Finance to ensure that what we put forward works in the framework of the legislature as you guys work through your subcommittee process, as well as the appropriation process. There are a lot of factors to consider when talking about zero-based budgeting. Are we budgeting by a program within a department? Are we budgeting by down to a contract? Is the expectation that we would provide a list of contracts that could change on an annual basis? So there are a lot of nuances and factors to zero-based budgeting that at this point we don't have a good handle on. To be quite frank with the committee, we're already into February. Legislature is taking a pretty time-consuming this year at the pace that the legislature is moving forward. I would expect OMB would need at least a year's time frame to create a structure that works for not only the IT systems that we use, but also works with coordination with legislative finance divisioning and developing something that is useful for the legislature on the other side. So those are my opening remarks, and I'm happy to address questions or concerns about the approach that was not taken.
Representative Galvin on zero-based budget.
Yes, thank you. That was an excellent report. I understand where you stand, and that makes sense to me. I'm curious to know, you know, if this were to be a year out to fill somebody's wish list to get zero-based budgeting example here before us, it seems like there wasn't a fiscal note with this, was there?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, no, this would be incumbent upon the team that I have at OMB right now.
As a follow-up. Thank you, through the chair. It seems to me that this is a very big undertaking, and if you are going to employ tools such as modifying your software, it's going to be at a cost to all of us. And I just want to make sure that we as a body are aware of that. If we choose to ask for this to be pursued, I just think it's a very important discussion for us to have, because I don't want to be disingenuous about what the cost is to the state.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I appreciate that. We are fortunate at the Office of Management and Budget to have a system that is managed by staff internally. But if we're going to change directions in how we present the budget, I want to make sure it's a coordinated effort between the administration and the legislature so that we're not putting out something that, you know, causes confusion or slows down a process or doesn't give people the information that they're looking for. I would want to make sure that it is a process that we all can agree upon in the presentation format as well as, you know, just decision-making as we move through.
We have a question from our colleague, Mr. Representative Stapp. Representative Stapp, the floor is yours if you can hear us.
Yeah, I think Co-Chair can hear me.
Yes, perfectly.
All right. Thank you, Co-Chair Gilson, to the chair, to Ms. Sanders. So I didn't quite catch this. Did you say you didn't have any examples of other states that have used this budgeting method, to the chair?
Director.
Yes, thank you for that question through the chair, Representative Stapp. No, we were not able to identify other states that are using zero-based budgeting as a tool.
Follow-up.
Follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair. So, I mean, I can think of the top of my head, Texas, Florida, Oklahoma, Illinois, different states have variations of that. Some are kind of programmatic deductions. I kind of think that we were asking not for the entirety of the budget, but really just one department at minimum through the chair. So what is that a practical ask in your opinion or not? One department.
I think he said, is that a practical ask? Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, happy to look at how Texas and other states that you mentioned, I think it was Texas, Florida, and maybe one other. Even one agency is a time-consuming process to ensure that we have a certain standard process in place on how we present information to the legislature, how we transmit information to the legislature. And while we say, I will share internally, we talked and we're like, oh, let's take Department of Environmental Conservation. It's a small agency. But the minute you start working through the complexities of each of the programs that are within that department, it becomes very difficult to quickly put something together. And I take pride in my work and would not want to be haphazard about what we were putting together as zero-based budgeting. Then we went to the other end of the spectrum with the long debate that we had today about corrections. It was one that we spoke about internally and whether maybe corrections would be the approach that we take. So I don't disagree that zero-based budgeting is a process that could provide a better way to look at budgets on an annual basis. I want to make sure that it's done well thought out in a presentation format that is agreed upon and useful for both the administration and the legislature.
Yes, follow up, Representative Staff for the director.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Justin, to the chair, to Ms. Saunders. Okay, so that would beg the question of how the mental health trust is able to do that with their $45 million budget. But I know that on a personal level, what I am interested in is being able to break out programmatic funding, particularly statutorily obligated programmatic funding, by department, i.e. where the money goes and what the money does. And if we were to work with the Ledge Finance Division to kind of do that, do you think that would be a practical ask through the chair?
Director.
So through the chair, Representative Stapp, again, yes, happy to have those conversations about what somebody is envisioning and what it will look like. Might I share that there are 60 legislators that we're trying to make sure that we are, have 60 different ideas that we want to make sure that we're bringing all of that together. So again, the Mental Health Trust Authority has a budget that is zero-based budget for projects that they are going to fund based on a plan that they have in place. That budget, zero-based budget approach for the Mental Health Trust has been in place for as long as I have been in state government, over 20-something years. So it's something that needs to be addressed with thought and consideration, and that's the approach that I would like to take if we're going to move that down that direction.
Okay, last follow-up, Mr. Kruger.
Last follow-up, then Rep. Bynum, we're going to close out after that. Representative.
Yeah, I think Coach Justin, through the chair to Ms. Saunders. So if the ask were strictly one department programmatic funding broken out by a statutory or just legislative obligation, how difficult would that be to itemize through the chair?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, that is something that we have tried in the past. It is part of what we call the core services that are provided by the departments and is included in the information in the books. It is more difficult than it sounds, but you know, a factor that we could incorporate into a zero-based budgeting process.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justison. I'm going to try to be calm or gentle, inquisitive. It just seems odd to me that when we talk a little bit about zero-based budgeting that we want to take a step back and say that it seems too complicated. To me, I don't think that just seems odd to me because we should be able to, in my mind, justify for each department, we go to a division within a section of a division and be able to understand in statute, number one, why does that division exist? What is its core principles and goals? Those are things we already know. And how much money do we need to operate it without having to go back and look at the previous year's budget and be able to justify why we spend every dollar we spend? And so I understand that that takes some work. I do understand that. I do know that it will take time for your office. It'll take time for those divisions to do that. But that's why we pay people to do this. And so my question is this. If it is such a challenge to do it, did you in your department or any department ask for and or look at an option to bring somebody in to help with that process? And if so, what would that cost?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, gathering my thoughts, I apologize. Yes, I do get paid to do the budget, and my team do as well. We have an extensive amount of work that we are tasked with. No, we did not reach out to anyone in outside. Could we? Yes. I don't have any idea on how much that would cost. One thing I will remind the committee is if you'd like to take a zero-based budget approach in the appropriations process, by all means, this legislature can do that as well. I am happy to look at it, and I am happy to come up with a strategic plan to do that. But again, I don't want it to be off the cuff. And while it sounds easy in concept, it is more complicated. There are a lot of nuances in budgets and in agencies. And I'm not trying to diminish the idea in any way or say it's so complicated that we can't do it. I want us to be thoughtful about it. And I'll leave my remarks at that.
Is a quick follow-up?
Yeah, so I have to go downstairs to the first floor and chair another meeting for 2 hours. So I want you to keep that in mind. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice. I appreciate the hard work that you guys do in your department and the divisions, and absolutely not trying to diminish that at all. My question was really framed around the idea of understanding that this is going to potentially be very complicated. I was just wanting to know if you had reached out and explored the idea of trying to get help, and if so, you know, what would that cost us? Because we obviously want to be able to support your department to do the work. The legislature did ask for the zero base on one agency, and the response back is that we need more work to do on that, need some help. I want to know what help that is you need. So that was the basis of the question. So I appreciate your comment back. Thank you for the time.
Representative Galvin, did you have a quick question?
Very brief. I just wanted to comment that there is an Executive Budget Act that has taken place years ago, and I've actually found it very interesting to see that departments do have are reporting KPIs and things that are kind of interesting in the subcommittee process. Not all departments are following that, but I think it's an interesting discussion that we should have, and I look forward to it in the future. Thank you.
Griffin Tomaszewski, why don't you wrap us up?
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. So in you submitted a report December 19th that said that implementing zero-based budgeting, even in one agency, is a multi-step process. You must have at least looked into what that process looks like. Have you done any steps so far, and what are those steps that you're speaking about?
Briefly, Director.
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, I have not implemented any steps or taken any action towards zero-based budgeting at this time, other than to think about and review what concepts would be necessary, what considerations that we need to make in zero-based budgeting.
Thank you.
Yep.
When I just think of the legislature and zero-based budgeting, we have to have 60 officers. They're constitutional legislators. We would quickly rebuild the edifice we've built. I just think it would come all right back. I can think of one item that maybe there could be some savings in, but, boy, it's a tricky business. That concludes our business for today. Our next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, February 20th at 1:30. At that meeting, we will hear two presentations. The first presentation is an overview from the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Then we will hear the Department of Revenue present its 2017 budget overview. With that, we will adjourn this meeting at 3:16. Thank you.